So we are listening to the 10th chapter, The Divine Glories of the Lord. The idea being that with these 75 examples, it makes it very easy for us to see the Lord everywhere. Because the moment you see the sun, you see the moon, you see the ocean, and the immensity and the size, and then you say, oh, this is the grandeur of the Lord. You see the tall mountains. Anything that is beautiful, anything that is wondrous, anything that is huge, vast, all reminds us of the Lord. The Lord is there everywhere. He's even there in the smallest ant or the little bacteria or the little, you know, cockroach even crawling. The Lord is there everywhere. But through these examples, it becomes easier for us. And more you read this chapter again and again, it kind of reinforces that. And that is the whole idea, because the remembering of the Lord's name and remembering His glories and remembering His love and compassion purifies the mind. They say that the Lord's name is like a detergent, just as when you put detergent, the clothes come out clean, white, fresh. So chanting the name of the Lord is like a detergent that cleans your mind. And so the more you remember Him, the more you chant His name, the more you think about Him with love, the more you get those qualities. Like a basketball, a young student, you know, they tell him, well, you know, you need to emulate how Kobe used to play or how Magic used to play. A physicist, you know, will model himself on Einstein or Galileo or Oppenheimer. So similarly, a spiritual student, the more he thinks about it, the more he becomes like it. They say, as you think, so you become. The more you think about something, you become that. So that's why they say thinking about the Lord is a beautiful way to bring yourself closer to that divinity. Ultimately, we are all that divinity, but by remembering Him, it makes that experience stronger. So we have learnt a few examples last time. Actually, the last two or three weeks, we have been doing different examples. Today, we'll start with verse number 30. Chapter 10, verse number 30. Prahladaschasmi daityanam Kala kalayatamaham Mrigānāñca mrigendroham Vainateyascha pakshinām. So among the daityas, I am Prahlad. Daityas are the demons. Because in our mythology, there are these good celestial forces called the gods in heaven. And then there are these demons who usually live in the underworld, and they are constantly fighting with the gods and the demons. So throughout time, this war battle has been going on, and sometimes the good forces predominate and they win, and sometimes the evil forces get stronger, and which happens also symbolically in our mind. Our mind also, there is a constant battle between good and evil, between right and wrong, between what I should do and what I should not do. And at sometimes the good force is predominant, like when I'm sitting in meditation or chanting the name of the Lord, and then I go out and out into the world of business, and then I start cheating the people or I start doing things I shouldn't do, then the evil forces predominate. So also this daityas are these demons. Now this story, there was this very evil king or demon whose name was Hiranyakashyapa. Hiranya means gold and Kashyapa means surrounded by, made by. So his name itself suggested that he was very materialistic because he was surrounded by gold and engulfed by gold. And so he actually got a boon from gods. He meditated for several years sitting in the Himalayas with great penance. And the Lord appeared and blessed him, you know, with great powers. And so he became so powerful that not only he dominated the earth and the low underworlds, but he also went up to heaven and was defeating the gods. And he was very powerful. And then the gods, you know, approached Lord Vishnu, who is the most powerful, that please protect us from this from this evil demon. So he said, yeah, when time comes, I will. So as happened, this evil king, his wife got pregnant. Her name was Kayadhu, and she got pregnant. And in this battle, what happened was that Indra, who was the king of the gods, was fighting, and this Hiranyakashipu appeared, had gone away for a while to fight another battle. So Indra attacked his palace because this demon was not there and captured his wife and her pregnant wife and was taking her. And he said, you know what, I'm going to destroy this child. At least one more demon will not come out. From a demon, only another demon can come out. So as he was going, the Naradji comes. And Naradji is a very divine saint. And he tells Indra, no, you know, in this lady's womb, there is a divine child. He's not a demon child. Even though he's born of a demon, he's not. And so it is said that he then took that mother and the baby to his ashram, to his hermitage, to his mission, and every day instructed the baby in the womb about the glory of the Lord. So prenatal education. So every day that this saint would teach Prahlad about God, about Vishnu, and about the glories of God and how he should be a good person. And then in the meantime, after a few days, Hiranyakashipu came, and then he took his pregnant wife back. And so this Prahlad was born in a demon's house. Now Hiranyakashipu was so powerful that he not only dominated the kingdoms, but he said that nobody will chant the Lord's name. Instead of saying, you know, Vishnave Namaha, you say Hiranyaya Namaha. You chant my name. So instead of God's name, my name will be chanted in all the temples. My statues will be there in all the temples. All the children in the school will be taught that Hiranyakashipu, the demon, is your king, is your god, not only your king. And so everybody was afraid because they would be killed. So everywhere they would have his statues and they would bow down to him and chant his name, Hiranyaya Namaha, and all that. So his son, Prahlad, who had been taught in the womb by the saint and was a divine child, when he went to school and the teacher said, you have to chant Hiranyaya Namaha. He said, who is Hiranya? He said, he's your father. He said, yeah, he's my father. He's not God. He said, but everybody else, don't say that. He said, but he's not God. He's just an ordinary human. I know Vishnu, Lord God Vishnu. I'm going to chant his name. And so he taught all the children, you know, they said, don't chant my father's name. He's not God. I'll tell you the true name of God. And so all the children in the class started chanting God's name. And the father came to know, and he called the teacher, and he was ready to punish him. He was going to kill him. He said, I taught you to teach the children to chant my name. He said, sir, I am doing my best, but your son has great influence. And he has convinced all of them that you are not God, and there is a Vishnu, God, who is higher than you. And they are all chanting his name. And he's your son. I cannot, you know, do anything. I cannot. How can I punish your son? Because he's the prince. He said, okay, I'll take care of him. So he got very, first he tried to convince him and he wouldn't listen. Then he, when he wouldn't listen, he said, I'm going to have him killed. And so he put him under the elephant's foot and he still didn't die. Put him in fire, threw him off the mountain. And every time the Lord would save him. Because he would just be chanting the Lord's name, and he said, you can throw me off the mountain, and he would be thrown off, and the Lord would appear and gently hold him in his hands. And he was saved every time. And finally, Hiranyakashipu brought him, and he said, I'm going to kill him myself. You know, these my servants are not doing a good job. So he asks him, you know, you said God is everywhere. He said, yeah. He says, God will come and protect you. He said, he's everywhere. If need be, he will come. So he said, is he in this pillar? You know, there was a palace pillar. Is your God in this pillar? He said, yeah, God is there too. He's everywhere, I told you. He said, okay. So he kicks the pillar so hard, he was so strong that the pillar cracked and broke. And out of that appeared the Lord. And this time he appeared in the form of half lion and half man. And he, you know, killed the demon king. And then Prahlad was, of course, blessed and, you know, he became the king. So the idea is that even among the demons, a divine child or divine person can be born. And that's why he says, among all the demons, I am that divine child, Prahlad. So I am the Prahlad. I am that young boy among the demons. Kala Kalayatamaham. Kalayatam means among the reckoners, among the counters, among things that are counted, things that are measured, I am time. And time is the ultimate measure, right? Everything is in time. We all are governed by time, past, present, and future. And ultimately, time will take over us. You were born at a certain time, and then you live for a certain time, and then when the time comes, you will be gone. And time will go on forever and ever and ever and endless. So that's why they say time is the most powerful counter, the reckoner. Everything is under the influence of time. And we feel also helpless. You know, God, I don't know when my time will come and I will have to go. But then I was reading another commentary where this teacher says it very beautifully. He says that we are all under the influence of time and we feel so pressured. I don't have time. You know, I have so much to do. You know, I have so many appointments and I have so many emails to check. You know, my computer is backed up and I have so many text messages and so many phone calls and so much work at work and then so much work at home and so many, this. And then we are all the time stressed. Oh, I'm pressured, I'm stressed, I don't have time. And we are constantly looking at the watch. Nowadays, people don't even carry watches, they look at their cell phones. But the idea is that we are under the influence of time. So they say that the way to go beyond time, do not become a helpless victim of the time, is to go beyond time, is to slow down. Because the more you try to catch up, the more you get stressed. Oh, I'm stressed. And then your blood pressure goes up and then your, you know, all your other headaches and stress-related problems come. So they say that slow down your life. Be particular about what you do. Prioritize. Okay, these are the important things in my life. These I must do. And these are not so much. If my goal is spiritual evolution, if I want to become a more spiritual person, then I have to prioritize. Of course, I have to do my work, but then certain amount of time I must spend in my spiritual pursuits. And I must set aside, okay, this is my time for my spiritual pursuits. And then other things that are useless, that take away from this goal of mine, of spiritual, I should cut down. Why do I have to uselessly talk to people unnecessarily, you know, or just spend hours gossiping on the phone? People say we don't have time, but then you call them and they can talk to you for half an hour, you know, about people and gossip. Or why do I have to just, you know, useless emails come, just delete them, you know, information on the internet. There is so much information and people will sit and spend hours just uselessly surfing the net. Why do I have to do that? Why do I have to watch TV programs that are worthless, that don't get me anywhere, that are violent or that have no logic? Or, you know, some of these soap operas, they just go on and on for years and don't take me anywhere. So let me limit that. I'm not saying that one shouldn't have entertainment and fun, but let me limit those activities and conserve my time and use it for useful activities that make me a better person and that make the world better. So if whatever little I can do to make the world a better place, let me utilize my time for that. And that is one way to conquer time. So where you are not under the influence of time, but you decide how my time will be utilized to the best of my abilities. And then the ultimate way to go beyond time is to realize that I am that timeless reality, that consciousness, that Brahman, that divinity, which is everywhere, is also in me. And through meditation, through practice of that meditation, when your mind becomes quiet and it's single-pointed in that silence, then you realize that you are that timeless entity. All of us are that timeless entity that you can call Brahman or Father in heaven. At this moment, I am occupying this body of Anil or Amrita or whatever, you know, form I have taken. But in reality, I am that formless reality. And when your mind becomes quiet, you go beyond time. I like to give a beautiful example. Say now you're under stress at night. You know, you next morning you have no money and there is a loan due and your house is going to be foreclosed. And you're thinking, how can I get the money? How can I? And so whole night, you don't sleep. Why? Because tomorrow the bank is going to come and foreclose on my house. And then that every minute passes with great difficulty. Why? Because you are stressed, or say a mother whose child is not well. And so she's sitting with the child all night and, you know, giving him Tylenol and checking the fever and putting the cold packs and all. Every minute seems so long, you know, the time does not seem to pass. But say if there are four people who are playing poker, you know, who are playing teen patti that we play in India, the cards. And then you sit and play and you start at 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock at night after dinner, and cards, diamonds, hearts, diamonds, spades, clubs, hearts, diamonds. That's all you're thinking. You say, what happened? It's 5 o'clock in the morning. Where did time go? You know, because why? Because your thoughts are minimum. All you're thinking of is heart, diamond, spade, club, nothing else. And your mind is relatively quiet. You're not thinking at that time. You're not thinking about your business, or you're not thinking about the children. Wife is home getting mad. Doesn't matter. You know, right now I'm having fun. So when the thoughts are less, then time passes easily. But when the thoughts are much, how am I going to pay the mortgage? How am I? Then, you know, the person is more stressed. So they say that through meditation, through this chanting of the Lord, you can quieten the mind. And by remembering the Lord, where that one thought alone is there, then your mind becomes quiet. And then you go beyond time. So then you go to that timeless reality that you can call Om, or you can call Brahman or Father in heaven. So the idea is that I am the timeless time. I am the time that overcomes everybody except the Lord, who is beyond time. So that is the meaning of that, that I am time among all the counters, among all the reckoners. Then he says, Mriga Nancha Mrigendroham. And among the animals, I am Mrigendra. I am the lion. And in all the world's literature, anywhere you say, who is the king of beasts? They say, lion. Why? Because, you know, he's strong, he's powerful, he can kill even bigger animals than himself, he's very quick. And then also lion has that royal mane, you know, looks like a king. So that's why he says, among all the animals, I am the lion. And then he says, Venate yascha pakshinam. And among the birds, I am Vainata. Vainata is a name for Garuda. As we know, our gods, all of them have vehicles to ride on. If you see the pictures of the gods riding, like Vishnu, the Lord Vishnu flies on an eagle, Ganesh Bhagavan goes on a mouse, and then Durga, the goddess Durga, who is the symbol of power, she rides on a tiger. And then, you know, all different gods ride on, you know, different, like Kartikeya goes on a peacock and so on. So the idea, why do our gods ride on birds and animals and, you know, all that? So I was thinking about it. I have not read anywhere, but what I was thinking is that the reason animals and birds are associated with gods is for environmentalism, because the gods knew that men will become dominant and will become most powerful, and they will start destroying animals, birds, fish, which we are doing. You know, we are destroying animal species, we are destroying birds, we are killing, you know, lions and tigers, we are decimating them. So the idea being that the moment you see an animal or a bird or a fish, you realize that they are all divine. They're all associated with God. So the idea being that divinity is there in all birds and animals and fish, and so we should not just plunder and loot and just kill, you know, animals, but we should respect all life. So how is it that this eagle called Garuda became associated with Lord Vishnu, Lord Vishnu who is the sustainer of the universe? There's a very interesting story. Actually, all of these things are beautiful stories. But this is a very nice story. So it is said that there was a great king, very powerful king. Some people say it was the sage Kashyap. Some people say it was the great king. But it is said that he had two wives. One was a very beautiful, was very sweet, very nice lady. Her name was Vinata. Vinata was her name. Vinata also means humility. So she was a very sweet, very nice lady. She was the older wife, and then the younger wife, as always happens, she was extremely beautiful, but very wicked. very, very vain, you know, very proud of her beauty. And she was jealous of the older wife and always tried to put her down. So, and they used to always, you know, she always used to, the king, because king loved the younger wife more because she was prettier and all that. And so he used to always neglect the older wife. And it is said that when they got pregnant, the older wife gave birth to this eagle called Garuda, this very beautiful eagle, very nice. And then the younger wife, because she was evil, she gave birth to snakes. A lot of snakes were born from her. That's just a mythology, just a story, whatever, but for whatever you take out of it. And she was even more upset. So what she did was, she had some kind of a bet with the older wife, and she defeated her because she cheated and won in that game. And the result was that the loser should become the slave of the winner. So the older wife lost, Vinata, and so she became the slave of the younger wife. Her name was Kadru. Not only she made her a slave, but violating that, she actually threw her in the lowest hells, you know, the worst place, and she had her imprisoned over there, and she was suffering, and she had told her snake sons, you know, you guard her and make sure nobody takes her out. And so it is said that the older one's son, Garuda, who was the eagle, he actually realized that my mother is imprisoned in this lowest hell. And so he flew down there and he killed all the snakes and he rescued his mother and brought her back. And so because he was so noble and so good, so Lord Vishnu selected him as his ride, as his vehicle. And it is said since then the eagles and the snakes have enmity. And the eagles don't like snakes, and they actually do. They are the only beings that actually can pick up the snake and kill them. So he says, among all the birds, I am the eagle. I am that royal eagle. Even here, the eagle is considered the royal emblem of the United States because it's a very royal bird. So he says, among all the birds, I am not only the ordinary eagle, but the eagle that is the vehicle of Lord Vishnu. Any comments on this? Yes. I think when he talks about God principle, he's not talking about the individual form of the God, because the form of God is, you know, is anything that has form is temporary. Anything that has form is temporary, even if it's God with a form, that is an appearance. On that, but there is the consciousness, which is called as Brahman, or which has no form, or which Jesus called as Father in heaven, who has no form, who is that formless reality, which we call as Brahman or consciousness. And Om is the sound symbol that represents that consciousness. So that all pervading consciousness that is there everywhere as that, because this whole universe is pervaded by that. Right now, he's there everywhere. He's in the space. He's there in air. He's talking through us. He's listening through us. But it is that formless substratum and the energy and the support of this whole universe. I think that's what he's referring to. Yeah. No, I think once they're enlightened, they're in a higher plane of consciousness. Higher than you and me, because they say there are four planes of consciousness. One is deep sleep, one is dream, and one is waking. And then there is the fourth stage of consciousness called enlightenment or called Turiya. So they always revel and live in that state. Yeah, they still have to go through the body's experiences. You know, like Jesus had to be crucified, and there was Ramakrishna Paramhans, he had a throat cancer, which was very painful. So whatever the prarabdha, whatever the destiny of that body for that particular time, they have to go through that. And they still feel hungry, they have to eat, they still have get sick, and they have to go take medicine. It's not that. But they revel in a higher state of consciousness where they do not have any more the body identification. They know that the body is a cloth I'm wearing, and I have to drop it any moment. You know, when it's time, I'll drop the body. And in the meantime, whatever the body, prarabdha, the destiny, they go through it, but knowing that it is not me. See, you and I, when our body gets hurt, We identify, I am hurting, and I am sad, and I have a problem. When somebody doesn't talk to me nicely or somebody insults me, you and I feel hurt because we are still living at the lower level of consciousness. But mentally, they are in a higher plane, and whatever happens to the body, the mind, and the intellect is not happening to me. Swami Chinmayananda, even when his heart was only 5% working, 95% of his heart was destroyed, he was still traveling and giving talks. I remember one time, I this was towards the end of his life. And I was in the backstage. I don't know what I was doing there, but they used to have a lot of times they wouldn't, but in this case, they used to put the curtain. And so he would be wheeled by a wheelchair, and they would get him to sit on this platform where he used to speak. And while they would be wheeling, he would be short of breath. He couldn't breathe. You know, he was so short of. And the moment they put him on the dais and opened the curtain and the mic was there, he changed. He became a lion, and he used to talk with so much power. I remember his words were so strong and so much strength in his voice and his ability. An hour and a half, he would speak like there is nothing wrong with him. And then I saw that happen in front of my eyes. And then they closed the curtain. And the moment the curtain closed, he became blue. He couldn't breathe. And they had to wheel him off. So these people go beyond their body, because they identify with that God principle. So and this I have seen with my own eyes. It was like a magical transformation in this one entity. Human, how he could, you know, control his body even till the last. Yeah. Right. Right. No, he was feeling the pain. It's not that when the nails were being driven into his feet, he was in that state of consciousness. That's why he said, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. So he was feeling the pain. And not only that, the reason he said it is because he knew that these people are torturing an innocent saint, a prophet, and their karmic load will be tremendous. See, they say that if you harm somebody, you know, it's harmful. But if you harm a saint, the wrath of, because the Lord says that this is my saint, he's my child, he's my prophet, and he's spreading my word, and you are torturing him. That karmic debt is so heavy on that person. It is such a heavy negative effect. So he knew that these poor people will suffer the consequences. It's not that he wished them to suffer. In fact, he was compassionate, that I hope they do not suffer what they are going to. So he could visualize that. You know, so he was much more clairvoyant than you and I. And that's why when I see people, you know, torturing others and slaughtering women and children, and you feel bad. You say, look, this person doesn't know what he's doing, because he's going to have to suffer the consequences of every action. And so one has to be very careful, you know. So he could see that. The saints can see that.